Hello, everyone, and welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Panier, and this week I'm flying solo as my good buddy Kevin Lucco is on the disabled list this week, so I'm honored to welcome Jack Michaels filling in for him. Jack, thanks for joining me back on the show this week.
Hello, Rob, and a speedy recovery to Kevin, and I hope he gets back. And if anybody can fly anything solo, it is you, my friend. So let's rock and roll today.
I'm used to it, though, Jack, because nobody really likes to talk to me. So flying solo is kind of a standard for me.
That's how I got into radio. I think my mother just said, well, the kid's talking to himself a lot. Let's just get him a cassette recorder.
Well, Jack, let's start out by talking about Peer Performance Player and Pitcher of the Week, both coming from your Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks this week. So let's first of all talk about Kevin Kraus, named as the Peer Performance Player of the Week. What a phenomenal week he had. Hitting .560, led the league in slugging percentage, on base, and average. This guy all of a sudden is just on fire.
He has been on fire, and it's not that it hasn't been in there for Kevin. Good ball players, you know, Rob, and you know, he had flirted with a little bit of a hamstring twinge a while back, a few weeks ago, and, you know, maybe a hand thing and so on and so forth. And I think Chris Coast wanted to get him. He knew that this was in there for him and wanted to get him in the mentality of going, let's get this healed up. Let's go. Let's play. And start getting him a lot of at-bats, get him back in. And his barrel percentage, Rob, and I talk about it on the broadcast a lot, I can't recall during four at-bats of him not barreling something up in all four. I mean, it is incredible how much that his barrel has found that ball. And then he's so strong, and he's finding holes in the left side. His ability to go the opposite way, you know, through right, then he can elevate a ball and drive it out of the park. So, yeah, Kevin has, and we see his numbers where you just rolled off of him hitting, but you know, from a catcher standpoint, you know, he's been a good receiver. You know, the arms, these young arms the Red Hawks have kept the boat afloat, and he's been able to throw out some guys on the base pass. So it, not just the hitting, but this former Pirates draft pick is old. You know, he's kind of got put together the well-round game, and I think that's what happens, Rob. You know, when you start, everybody is like this. when you're feeling good, or if you're at any job and you're producing, you know, the world seems to go a little bit better. You catch every green light on the way into town. You know, it's like you find a $10 bill in the street or a pair of pants out of the wash. Going, oh, where's this? That's kind of what's happening to Kevin. I'm knocking on wood as I'm saying this, but let's hope it continues, because he's really deserving of this, and he has really put together not just a week or two, but a few weeks now of really good ball.
Well, if there's one person who would know about whether somebody would be a successful catcher or not, it sure seems like Chris Coast would be the guy to do that.
Yeah, well, and I think in talking to Chris, and it's funny because what I think makes Chris a good manager is what you said right there, his ability, and you and I and Kevin have talked about this before on the show, his ability to relate to these guys at a level where the understanding is so much from the other side. They know that Chris knows. You know, they know that this guy has paid the ultimate, you know, long-term dues to get where he got to and eventually a World Series champion. So they know. So I think it was referring to like guys like Kevin Kraus, you know, that, you know, when you have a little hamstring and your body doesn't feel 100% right, and your manager says, you know what, that's okay, 75% is good, just give me what you can. And then, you know, you kind of, you know, maybe you take a foul ball off the mask or something and you're kind of not feeling right, and then your manager goes, it's all right, get back in there, let's go. And that is the everyday mantra. And then guys like Kevin, who are, you know, Staten Island, New York boy, he just, you know, locked in, and it breeds this toughness, let's go, let's move. And that's kind of the way it is with Chris and the whole team. So there are really no excuses. Not that these guys make them, but there are no excuses. You just go out and play, and you play through maybe a minor injury, or you play through a little bit of this, or you play through the heat. when you're catching every day or you're in the lineup every day, you just play. And Chris has a way of relating that way of taking every day so well. It really is, Rob, to me, what's impressive about Coaster.
Well, peer performance pitcher of the week this week, Jack, is Ryan Flores, a guy who's been in the American Association for a little while, but has always had phenomenal stuff. But he has a huge week, not just earning three saves, but 3 two-inning saves, which is pretty much unheard of in these days. Ryan having quite a season so far for the Red Hawks.
Well, yeah, as you know, the Red Hawks had their closer, Blake Rogers, contract transferred, and so when that happened, when the Diamondbacks, grabbed Blake Rogers, you had to figure out. I remember asking Chris and Anthony Renz and the crew, the coaching staff, like, all right, who steps into the closing role? And the Red Hawks were in a place where they weren't just pitching every fifth day by committee and maybe every fourth or fifth day by committee. They didn't have a designated closer. So where it pans out is that when you've got a guy like Ryan that can come in the eighth inning when you have a 5-4 lead or a 4-2 lead or a 6-5 lead, he can come in and hopefully get the eighth out and then stay in for the ninth and sew it up. So he's kind of molded himself into that role, yet it's not really a designated role as a closer. It's just that the Red Hawks, that seems to be the plan. And, you've seen Ryan, Rob, for now several years. And we know how devastating he is to right-handed batters. What he throws is just, I would hate to be a right-handed batter. Now, guys have hit off him, but he backs up that Frisbee slider that he'll throw once, twice in the front door, and then that comes inside or starts middle and goes away to the other batter's box. It is just at times an impossible pitch to lock in on, even if you know it might be coming. It's just the natural human body doesn't sit long enough to not tell your arms to swing, and by the time you've swung, you're ahead or you've missed it on some bat plane. It really is incredible what he's been gifted with the right arm. But to me, his ability to also stay in, as you said, and get those two-inning saves, to be effective also against very good left-handed hitters, where he can throw that in the back door. And then just when you're all gaga'd up about his 72-mile-an-hour Frisbee slider, you forget that Ryan Flores throws about 91, 92 with a fastball that he can locate. And the marriage of those two pitches has been so effective for Ryan. And, I remember going up, when the Red Hawks would play Ryan, when he was on the opposition. And maybe sometimes the usage of him was such that if we had seen him, he'd maybe been worn down and the Red Hawks were able to get to him. Well, again, I think the way the Red Hawks are using Ryan is really good. And you can tell if he's had 2 days rest or three, it's unbelievable. But we jokingly call him ever ready Ryan because he's always ready. So you can actually use him probably every day, but do you want to? So the usage of Ryan has been tremendous. I think it's showing in his results, Rob, on the mound, and his ability to get swings and misses and get out of jams has been the big reason why the Red Hawks are contenders in the American Association North Division.
You and I were talking a little bit before the show. I had a chance to sit down with Ryan, I think it was back in 2016, and his stuff has always been so good, but he's been so hard on himself, and so I'm wondering, has he kind of been able to brush off some of this harsh criticism he's giving to himself now?
A little bit. I talk to him probably every day in some way or another, one fashion or another. And, as a kid for Kerrville, Texas, and he said, it's a home of rodeo. I said, what do you got in Kerrville, Ryan? So we have the rodeo. I don't know. He comes from that stock. He reminds me of the, if you've ever seen the movie Christmas Vacation, where Clark Griswold has lit up his entire house, so much so that it's drawing battery-powered electricity from every other house in the neighborhood in Chicago. And Clark's in tears because he's just so in awe of what he's accomplished. And he's going down the row of family. And he goes to his wife, Ellen, and she's crying, and oh, Clark, this is beautiful, and Clark Griswold's crying. He goes to this, and he goes to, then he gets to his father-in-law, and his father-in-law looks at this monstrosity and says, "That little light's not twinkling, Clark," and he notices one bulb in like 500,000 lights that are lit up, and that to me is sometimes Ryan Flores. You know, he's the little light's not twinkling, Ryan. Yeah, he doesn't realize at times how effective he is, or maybe his mind is just locked so much on perfection or wanting to make every pitch every time. He's a little like the little lights aren't twinkling Clark guy to me. So I jokingly just go to him, Rob, and say, just, you know, Ryan, come on. He had one wild pitch there that moved a runner over. You threw, you know, you didn't strike out this guy or, you know. But, yeah, he still is the guy that's a little more tough on himself. But I think in this aspect, some of that is gone a little bit because he, you know, again, when you feel good, when you're throwing well, I think that rubs off, that other part kind of, it's still there, but it's not there to the degree that it has been in years past.
Well, I'm glad to see it because I've always been a big fan of Ryan, just a phenomenal young man. So good to see that.
Yeah. Well, me too.
Well, let's talk about your team there a little bit, Jack, because right now, winners of four straight games. There was a little kind of a tail off a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure you know when you lose a Kevin McGovern, you lose your closer in Blake Rogers. You know, that's kind of hard to replace, but it looks like Chris Coast has found a way to right the ship.
Well, to me, I mentioned about Chris earlier, his ability to relate to players. That's what, to me, I think is really a notch in Chris's managerial belt. But I think this season, more specifically, you know, when you lose not only Blake Rogers, your closer, but, you know, Kevin McGovern, as you said, Tyler Pike, is a shock that Tyler Pike did what he did the other day and is doing what he's doing at the AA level. When you lose, you know, Rogers, McGovern, Pike, earlier in the season, Kevin Hergett, you know, before the season, Frank Duncan, you know, guys in your rotation, even a middle infielder that is in AAA now, Trace Lehr. When you lose these, and specifically for the pitching, I think we saw some, because you're trying to incorporate, and then, you know, Blake, Gage Hinds, who's a starter, you know, but Gage is just a couple of years removed from open heart surgery. You know, he's had some arm issue that he's had to get repaired, and you're trying to get him back to where he was a couple of years ago for Gage. So you're trying to stretch out a pitcher. And then when you lose guys, you have to elevate other guys to different roles. Brent Jones, who's not familiar with starting, but he's been used in relief, you know, for the Red Hawks, and then you turn and you put him in the rotation. Well, it takes time to stretch out him into a starting role. So you've had two guys like that, and then you have to rely on some other younger arms, who I just call the young guns, whether it's the rookie from Bethany Lutheran in Mankato, Logan Nissen, who's going good, get him acclimated to American Association ball and those big hitters that are coming up, and you put him in that starting rotation, and, you know, Brett Helton, asking him to just step his game up a little bit more. That, to me, is maybe the biggest story for the Red Hawks, is the ability to massage the rotation while losing, you know, again, Duncan, Hergett, Pike, McGovern, and then your closer, Rogers. Think about that. That's four to your five starting rotation and your closer, and now you've got to mix and match and massage and figure out a way. I likened it the other day, Rob, to driving a toaster through a car wash. It's not an easy, I've never done that, but it can be easy to do that. So the Red Hawks have been able to do that, and Brent Jones is put together. So the funk, called a funk or called a little slide the Red Hawks were in, I think we saw the effects of losing some of these starters, maybe others trying to find themselves or get into roles to be effective, and you saw a little slide. And let's not kid ourselves. Sometimes the bats aren't there, even though they've been there for a good chunk of the year. I think we saw a little bit of the dip in those guys finding roles, getting stretched out, finding some confidence, and now on the backside, they married good starts with, again, an incredible offense that does not have, to me, really a weak spot in the lineup, all the way down to the rookie Will Zimmerman that is a walk-in highlight film, but Yeah, they've married now some really good quality starts with an already impressive lineup, and now we're seeing the effects of that on the other side.
You know, one thing I love about this lineup, Jack, is you're getting great production out of a guy like Leobaldo Pena and Carell Prime, guys we expect to put up big numbers. I love Manuel Boscan at the top of the batting order. I thought that was a brilliant move.
Yeah, it's nice. They stuck him at one for a while, and then Will is assumed. When Will is starting, Will Zimmerman, then Chris really likes to put him at the one, and it moves Manny to the two. So whether Manny's the one or the two, I do too. I think he can get deep in the counts. He's got barrel enough to drive and run. So, you know, if your leadoff guy gets on, or later in the game when you flip a lineup around as a Sam Dexter at the bottom or whoever that gets on, you've got a guy that can still be a run producer near the top in Manny Boscan. And he's a smart guy, Rob. He, you know, you don't know. Every now and then he might just lay a bunt down. And maybe you wouldn't expect Manny Boscan to lay anything down. But every now and then he'll do that. You know, he's got the ability to spray the field. I've seen him hit opposite field home runs. You know, he's pulled balls to right out of the park. He's gap balls, you know, to left center and to right center. And or he's just hit line drives up the middle. He is a productive man at the top. And when you're putting that in front of Pena, in front of Prime, you know, in front of Jordan George, who right now, this guy is just unbelievable at the plate. And then Silviano, who finds his groove. I mean, all of a sudden you've got yourself, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, that chunk that is all not really easy to get out, and then it's going to take long at bats. And Boscan oftentimes really starts that. He might be the straw that draws the free pass or gets on line drives or hits himself in the scoring position. Yeah, I do too. I like Manny. And I think the world of Manny too. He just goes about his business, and it's a fun, you know, that's the thing, Rob. It's a fun team. It's really a good bunch of, and I'm sure everybody you bring on says this, but it's really a good bunch of guys that are selfless guys that have a little fun, that all seem to get along. And I'm not sure what the value is on that, because it's pro ball. Go out and do your job. But I think there's a value to a good clubhouse, and the Red Hawks have that.
Well, Jack, let's look around the league a little bit and talk about Chicago, the team that Fargo is chasing right now. You know, you guys have a great set of catchers there, and those Dogs have quite a catcher there in Ryan Lidge. He's really been, I think, the difference between what we saw last season and what this team is doing this year.
Yeah, and he just continues to be one of those guys in the lineup, and Butch has a good lineup, obviously, and, you know, you put Ryan Lidge in that lineup, you know, with Casey and some of the other gentlemen that they have. They got good leadoff guys. You know, Metzger, maybe hasn't had the year that he had with the Red Hawks, but you know what? He can still get on base. You know, if he's not hitting, he can draw walks, and, you know, this is a pretty tough team. Ryan Lidge, yeah, how do you get Ryan Lidge out? I didn't know this, but Coaster told me the other day that I believe Ryan is Brad Lidge's cousin, perhaps?
Oh, okay.
Nephew, because there's a when Chris played with, of course, Brad Lidge, you know, on that. But I have to check the ancestry.com on that, but there's a tie-in on those two. But, yeah, no, they're good, and Chicago's been able to pitch it well enough. You know, you turn around, and every time you win and Chicago's there, Chicago wins. You know, I know recently a sweep of Houston, and, you know, they're just playing good ball. And the kicker is on this, because the way the schedule is set up, you know, the Red Hawks only have one more series left with Chicago and vice versa. The Red Hawks only have one more series with Milwaukee and vice versa. So it's going to get awfully intriguing as the Chicago's, Milwaukee's, and Fargo's of the world are starting to play the South Division and scatterings and spatterings of what's remaining in the North, because they don't have head-to-head. So it's really not necessarily what they're going to do against each other. It's what these teams that are leading the North are going to be doing against the South. You know, we haven't played Sioux City yet, you know, which is tops in the South. So, yeah, I think, Rob, I don't know where you sit as we, you know, get near a halfway point. But, man alive, it's going to be some early out-of-town scoreboard watching, and not necessarily North versus North. It'll be North versus South and how that goes. But, yeah, Chicago's going to be there. You know, I don't see them sliding too much because they have enough arms. They certainly have enough bats to produce runs. They're a good club.
Yeah, I think the one guy that really has stood out for them this season because he, you know, Casey Hobson had come in and, you know, you're playing for your father, so I'm sure there's some pressure on that. But he struggled a little bit, but last year he struggled a little bit, but this year he has looked really good for them.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, Casey seems to be an emotional at times player. He's very, let me change the word, passionate about his game, passionate about the strike zone, passionate about getting knocks, passionate about helping his team win, and it shows on that. I think maybe he's, I don't know, maybe I'm dead wrong, but it looks like he's kind of honed that down a little bit, and it looks like he's having more fun. I don't know, maybe I'm way off, but, you know, a Casey Hobson comfortable is good for Chicago and dangerous for everybody else. So, yeah, and Butch is still his fiery self. I love the fact that Butch still very much cares to win to a degree where he's still vocal. I love to see. I'd be nervous if Butch wasn't as vocal as he is. You know, that means that maybe the spark is gone, but that's still there too. So, yeah, Chicago's tough, and I don't know about you, Rob, but you know, a team that, and I would say the Redhawks are coming off a 6-1 homestand, but to find a team that plays in their park consistently well. And it seems like Chicago at Impact Field, it's one of those places that you can go in there and put up a bunch of runs, but you find a way not to win against Chicago at Impact Field. It's like they play at home, it seems, so well. And I'm saying this to you not even knowing what their home record is. It just from a feeling the last couple of years, we always go into Impact, and I'm thinking, gosh, it's tough to beat Chicago at Impact Field.
Well, this year they're getting a great production over the last month out of Jake Dahlberg, who was named as the Peer Performance Pitcher of the Month. He wound up starting out the season out of the bullpen, and this really all of a sudden caught fire for them in their rotation.
Yeah, he did. Had 8 strikeouts the other day. And you remember Chicago, they were just rolling out major league arms the last couple of years, for goodness sakes. And, you know, it's just like a gauntlet. And we faced Jake, I think, when he did come out of the bullpen. I'm thinking, Dahlberg out of the pen. That's the way to secure a game. Not unlike maybe a Brent Jones that the Redhawks used out of the pen and now has turned into a starter that has really good stuff. Just has to hone it and control it. Yeah, Dahlberg is tough to put consistent ABs against, it seems. And, yeah, when he's on, it is lights out. He can carry a 5, 6, 7 innings, which – How many teams have lost, you know, have had contracts transferred where you lose these arms? And I think, Rob, that's why we're seeing probably some of the runs the way they are. We're just getting, you know, nothing against the pitchers. It's getting thinned out a little bit with some of the big arms that you've seen in this league have their contracts transferred. So I think it's the bats have taken over a little bit, but left still are some arms that can still pitch and make people miss. And Dahlberg is one of those guys.
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a great point, Jack. And, you know, talking with Dan Vaughn about this a few weeks ago, one of the points he was making to me is it's the teams that have guys that are maybe a little older or really young that may be the ones to look at because their guys are not likely to wind up being transferred. And so, you know, a Gary or a Sioux Falls or a Chicago might wind up having an advantage in having some older guys.
Yeah, it's not a bad concept. I will say it this way. Guys that have, you know, because I can go back 25, 26 years, I guess, which means I'm now old, Rob, as you know. I'm getting older. We'll use that term. But I was chatting with Redhawks GM Matt Rao about this the other day. You even go back to the first year the Redhawks were in existence, 1996. Now, the Saints were loaded. You know, Marty Scott and crew, they had a good club and they had big veteran guys. And, you know, you can go down to Madison Black Wolf, even had a couple of big bats that were veteran bats and whatnot. And even Thunder Bay, the Whiskey Jacks, had maybe a veteran or two in there. And the Redhawks, yes, that year at Daryl Motley, yes, they had guys that were proven guys, you know, a Johnny Knott or a Chad Akers, you know, or Jeff Bittiger was a, you know, a pitching coach and still had his stuff. Not too far removed from from the Twins organization. But I look back at that, to your point and to what Dan was maybe getting to, we had locals on that 96, 97, 98 team. I mean, guys that were local, guys that played at North Dakota State University, guys that were around Fargo-Moorhead that made the team. They were an extra arm to have. Well, those locals, and I'll use that term, were a big reason why the Red Hawks were successful. A pitcher named Justin Fletchock, who is who's now with the North Dakota High School Activities Association, but Fletch was a good heavy sinker ball type pitcher, local kid, North Dakota State, was a big part of the rotation, big reason why we won. Greg Salvavold, Moorhead, kid, now is a hockey coach in Moorhead High, local kid that threw pretty well. Guy named Chris Coast, local, Concordia College, came in and just started raking. And it's funny, even you fast forward now 25, 26 years, and to your point, who knew what Will Zimmerman was going to do? And not that he's blowing the doors off, but I'll tell you what, he's a human highlight that is happening in a local. Logan Nissen for the Red Hawks, Bethany Luther in Mankato, Minnesota. I would challenge anybody listening, Rob, when's the last time at a cup of coffee and you brought up Bethany Lutheran, out of Mankato? You probably didn't. But, these guys, I would consider him a local. Austin Versteeg, who's a pitcher that comes in to chew up innings. Local. Concordia College, two-way player. Obviously it's an easy get because Chris Coase coaches Concordia College, but brings him in. We've had to rely on him to chew up innings, which is a reason to be. And I can go down the list of this. Mark Finkelberg, a rookie left-hander from St. Louis Billikens. We just added a pitcher named Luke Lind, who has the body framework of Ivan Drago from the Rocky movies, 6'6", beast, and, North Dakota State product, who had been a little cup of coffee in the Angels organization, but a local. So to make a long, long response, Rob, to what Dan was getting to and to what you are, maybe it is. Those ones that have enough veterans remaining, and I can only speak to the Red Hawks, you mentioned Prime and Pena, Jordan George been around a little bit, and Dylan Kelly's been around, a little bit to understand the system. And then you marry that with these upstarts who are, 3 years away from voting or driving a car, and it makes an interesting combination platter that has led to wins. So as long as the locals, as long as everybody does their job, for the most part, but it has been the combination.
Well, let's look at Milwaukee there for a moment with you there, Jack. Obviously the big story right there is Adam Brett Walker, peer performance player of the month last month in June. The one thing I think we're going to see interesting about them is with David Washington out here for a little bit is, can he keep up that torrid pace?
Yeah, you nailed it, Rob. You can tell, Milwaukee minus David Washington is a little different, and maybe even a lot different at times. David is such an impact guy, and then you put him and Adam back together, and that's a force, and not just those two, because Brett Vertigan is one of my favorite players in the league. I should say this on the show. I just think that guy creates havoc. He's a menace, and I mean that in a very good way. He's one of my favorite guys. And Logan Trowbridge is another guy that can just do damage. And if you had a healthy David Washington with Adam Brett Walker, with Logan Trowbridge, with Brett Vertigan, and then that's not even to say as you move down, Christian Correa, who is a good ball player and can hit. You pull David out of that thing. Yeah, you might be asking others to do a little bit more. And then you go to the pitching. I can't believe it. The Red Hawks recently playing in a series against Milwaukee. And, Rob, you looked at the rotation, and the Red Hawks were going up against David Holmberg, and then Matt Salter day two, and then Miles Smith. And you're thinking, well, boy, if you can get two out of three, you'd have to feel pretty good about yourself. And Fargo-Moorhead was able, one of those days for David, they just jumped all over him. He had a 58-pitch second inning, and the Red Hawks, before the dust settled, had put up seven runs on Holmberg. How many times does that happen? Not often. and were able to come back and grind it out against Matt Solter, and then able to get to Miles Smith, that was incredible, because you can talk about Milwaukee's lineup and Vertigan and Trowbridge, as we talked about, and Adam Brett Walker, and on through the list. But pitching-wise, they had it done. But if you take a big bat out of there, and I'm sure in Milwaukee they can't get David Washington back fast enough, it forces some other things. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see where it goes. Obviously, Milwaukee still has enough to put wins on the board, but you can see a little bit of the effect of a lineup without David Washington.
A couple of teams that struggled over the last month, but all of a sudden are kind of trying to build up a little momentum, the Kane County Cougars and the Winnipeg Goldeyes. You're going to see Winnipeg this week. You know, this is a team that I'm a little surprised by, that they're not a little bit higher up in the standings. But, you know, I wonder, when you lose a Mitchell Lamson before the season and the rotation isn't what we've kind of seen in the past, this might be a very bad year for Winnipeg, a difficult year for Winnipeg.
Difficult, yeah. And what happens is that I think Rick Forney, I think he's tried maybe an opener before, and then, you know, a guy throw one inning, chew up another guy throw a couple more innings, and he's doing whatever he can to keep arms fresh or to put his team in a position maybe to play from a spot where he might have a lead as opposed to chasing runs. And I think Winnipeg can score. You know, I mean, I don't think the Goldeyes have had, and we just saw them recently, and we'll see them again here, but we just saw them recently for four games at Newman, and at times it was a slugfest. You know, I mean, they had an inning, Rob, where they put up five runs in the top of the second, five, and Red Hawks' answer was five in the bottom. You know, and I think you're seeing the issue right there with Winnipeg, and it hurts to lose arms, and I wish the best for Rick, because I'm sure he's tried everything and more to get it going. You know, they can still, you know, Kyle Martin still is one of the most dangerous left-handed batters in the league. There's no question about that. It's not like they don't have the lineup to put runs across the board, but it's about pitching, and they're going to have to find a way to deal it, because I think they've found themselves locked into, as my high school coach once said, you're getting into a pee fight with a skunk, and you're not going to win it. So sometimes if you start getting into things where you have to score a lot of runs to win, well, a lot of times that may not work, because the other team might have an arm or two that can slow you down. And so I think with Winnipeg, they found themselves in, you know, chasing runs or getting behind, like the Red Hawks have, getting behind and having to chase runs, and they just don't have enough to stop the opposition from scoring. So, yeah, I'm a little shocked too. I think for Winnipeg, I almost give them, put an asterisk by them, you know, when they haven't been home for the last two seasons. You know, you can't use that as an excuse, because the bases are 90 feet. But there's something about a sense of normalcy, playing half of your entire schedule at your own home ballpark, to me, that maybe it's not noticeable until you're not winning or until you're under 500. And things like that sink in. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But it's got to be tough for them in the last year and a half, and going through what they're going through, trying to find some normalcy where it hasn't been normal, Rob. And I don't know. There's some rumor out there that Winnipeg might get back to Shaw Park here sooner rather than later.
Wow, that would be great. You know, I mean, I get what you're saying too, Jack, is that you know, the Jackson fans have been very supportive and welcoming down there, but that's still not your fans. You know, and no offense to them, that's still right. Not your fans, though. So
yeah, no, and the people in Jackson, yeah, you're right. The people in Jackson love their baseball. You know, they've got history, but you're right. It's not the, it's just something outside of normal, and anything outside of normal, ask Houston. You know, anything outside of normal is you know, just another one of those things you got to deal with that other teams don't have to worry about. Other teams know they're going to their park and their promotions and their normal fans and season ticket holders, and, you know, that there's a normalcy to that. So, yeah, you're right. Jackson's great. City's awesome. You know, field fantastic. You know, God bless Jackson for having to be able to house Winnipeg. But, again, it's a little bit other than what Winnipeg is used to.
Let's talk a little bit about the South with me here, Jack. First of all, beginning with Sioux City leading the division right now. They've had a lot of injuries, a lot of guys that have been signed, but manager Steve Montgomery figuring out a way to keep that team on top.
Well, I've known Steve for a couple decades anyway. I think I've known him since his firstborn wasn't even born, for goodness sakes, and now the kids, I think, driving cars and ready to graduate soon and all that. But I know this about Steve, Rob. if it's not going the way he wants, he knows how to get guys, he knows how to motivate guys, and he knows how to win baseball games. And so it's odd that, you know, Sioux City is still on top of the South, but you know, they'll have a little kink in the armor. Injury might hit them. They might even lose a player or two to an affiliated ball. But he finds a way to right the ship, it seems like, every single season. And it's a knack. I don't know where he got that. He spent some time on the right side of Doug Simonic for a while and back in the day. And I think it's the same mentality where that almost make it sound desperate, like, oh my gosh, where this is going in the wrong direction. This, I don't even know how we're going to do it. I turn around and say, Steve, you're 7 games up in the league. You're in first place. Yeah, I know, but, he is that kind of guy. So it stinks the fact that he's gone through some injury. But and certainly Kansas City is in his rearview window, and Cleburne has climbed a little bit of the charts after having a little dip. And so good heat. Good pressure from behind for Mongo. He's tasted success. He knows what it's all about. I think he thrives on it, to tell you the truth, Rob. Not saying that he's going out hoping for those things or injuries or to be depleted, but for some reason, with him and Bobby Post and the crew, they somehow thrive on that, and they still got some of the pieces. But the injuries they've had, you wouldn't wish on anybody.
And knowing Steve as I do, I think he's happier when he's thinking the world is just about to come to an end. So,
yeah, you're right.
That's working for
exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, let's talk about the Kansas City Monarchs. They got off to a very slow start to the season, Jack, but have caught fire, have been battling in that second position right now, and are getting just good enough pitching to help support that good offense they have.
Yeah, that's right. And, earlier I talked about how Chicago plays well at their park, and it's one of those parks where it's tough to beat them at their park. I think Kansas City fits into that mold too. And so you're right. The pitching is, and with Kansas City, they know their park extremely well too, but it's another one. It's funny. Whenever we go into Kansas City in Legends Field and to play the Monarchs, you're almost thinking like, okay, you better put up enough because they're going to rally in the ninth if they're down. They're going to rally in the eighth if they're down. They fit their park extremely well. And I never sleep on Kansas City. There's a newness there that they're really trying to create that buzz, in Kansas City. But we saw them earlier. Haven't seen them for a while now firsthand, just from the stats and box scores with KC. But that's another team that could streak a bit. They have enough offense to put up enough runs where if they get a little bit of pitching, they could streak. I could see them taking, 6 of 8, 8 of 10, and be that kind of team. So, yep, I've been impressed with Kansas City. They have enough offense to make some hay. Again, if they get enough arm work, it's good. But another team that, if they play well at home, I'd love to, on the road, we'll see. That's what I look at Kansas City. And really any team, I guess, is how you do on the road because, in essence, that's maybe where you make your hay. But whenever I look at KC and they're on the road, I know coming up to Sioux Falls this week and that's what I kind of pay attention to is KC on the road.
The Cleburne Railroaders were in fifth place 2 weeks ago, battled back to get themselves into third, one of the hottest teams, probably the hottest team in the South right now. And it looks like it's those veteran guys of Zach Narrier, John Nestor, guys like that, that have really got this team rolling now.
Zach Narrier, man alive, he is, as Casey Kasem would say, he's climbing the charts. He is climbing the charts. He's a dude. It's funny, Cleburne was in Fargo, so my boys, we were chatting down there, and the Redhawks kind of knocked them around a little bit. And Cleburne went home, and I thought, well, they have Houston coming up. They have Winnipeg, who hadn't been playing well, you know, coming up. And they should be able to right the ship. And then they didn't exactly roll through Houston. And then they didn't exactly roll through Winnipeg. And all of a sudden, uh-oh, Cleburne's in trouble. Because that's a home series with two teams that look like they might be able to get healthy on. And they didn't exactly roll through them. They dropped a few games. And then after that is when they started to get hot, as you said, and started climbing the charts. And you look at, Narrier, who again is just one of the guys in this league, you know, that he's the guy that he's one of the guys that when you're in the opposing team, you have to pick the guy you don't want to let beat you and got to be careful with. And certainly Zach is one of theirs, but he's not the only one. You got some big bats, as you know, Rob, and Cleburne that can knock runs in. You know, Ramon Hernandez is a big hitter that's in a challenge for the RBI lead in this league, and they got a good club. You got to put runs up against Cleburne.
Let's talk about the Lincoln Salt Dogs. They went into Kansas City, took two out of four this past weekend, and have really played well against the Monarchs this year. You know, they have a great guy in Kurt Smith who set the franchise record for home runs this past week, and there's a lot to like about Lincoln. I just wonder if there's enough pitching there to be able to help this team to wind up getting one of those top two spots in the South.
I think you pinpointed it perfectly, and we'll see Lincoln. I will personally here in the tail end of the week. So for the first time this year, technically, the Red Hawks played Lincoln an exhibition game in Nebraska City, Nebraska, which, look it up, the first Arbor Day celebrated in Nebraska City. It's like the home of Arbor Day. So if you like trees, and that's the place, Nebraska City, Nebraska. I remember sitting there. But you're right. Pitching is the thing, and Lincoln's just kind of flirting around that 500 record. They're going to have to find a way to pack wins together to make a push, you know, especially when you've got a leapfrog, maybe a Cleburne eventually in Kansas City and Sioux City. But Kurt Smith, how great a story is that? That's just how do you not root for Kurt Smith? It just seems like Kurt's been in it for a long time, that these guys that have been around for a long time. I remember back in the day, like when Sioux City had Nolan Lane, you know, and Nolan Lane seemed to have played, or Red Hawks had Zach Penfraise, who had played for many years. These are the guys you root for that are still doing it and doing it well. And, Smith is going to find himself in those career marks and American Association Baseball and Independent Ball, so good for him. But, yeah, you're right. It's funny how you and I go down all these teams and both sides, and how many times have we defaulted back to pitching. You know, if they can pitch it, they're going to be in it. It seems like the bats are there, but Lincoln's case is they're going to have to make, you know, get quality starts and quality series, and it was good to split a four-gamer at Kansas City. But that's what they're going to need consistently. So when we played Lincoln an exhibition game, they certainly put the ball in play. You know, you're right. They can hit it. They can swing it. And Kurt Smith's still doing it. But they're going to need to be backed up with arms if they're going to make a run in the South.
A guy having a big season for them, who you got to see last year when he was playing for you, is Forrest Allde. This guy can just flat out hit.
Forrest Allde been challenging Leo Pena, and now in that batting average mark, and now we, of course, got the young names like Wyatt Ulrich up there, and Logan Landon was there with Sioux Falls. But, yeah, that's no shocker to me. Forrest Allde, have you ever seen Rob Forrest? I really dig Forrest, and it's good for Lincoln that they got him back, because he was with the Red Hawks when Lincoln didn't play during the COVID year. It would have been nice to hold on to Forrest Allde, but, you know, that Lincoln's his spot. But have you ever seen Forrest watch a ball in to the plate and the way he takes a ball? It's, if you haven't watched video of that, or when you watch the Salt Dogs play, he is so locked in. It's like his mannerisms mechanically and with his brain are like seeing a ball, and he does this little half-cocked leg take that I've now seen, I think, one of our guys start picking up to do it. I don't know if it's a way to track a ball all the way through, but whatever it is he does to track a ball, obviously it's working. Just look at his numbers. But, yeah, Forrest Allde has not been an easy out for anybody. And I couldn't be happier for him. And I won't be happy when he plays the Redhawks, but I'm a big Forrest Allday fan. So good for him.
Yeah, I got to watch him play this last weekend when I was in Kansas City. So he's quite the eye is as sound as it gets, no doubt about that.
Yeah, he can track.
Well, Jack, you know, I started a new segment with Kevin a few weeks ago that I'm going to include you in. So this is what we're calling This Week in the Association, True or False. So I'm going to make five statements, and I want you to tell me whether they are true or false and your reasoning behind that. So can we roll with that?
Oh, okay. True or false.
Right on.
I'm good for a game. I'm good for a game.
All right, right on. Okay, you talked about Wyatt Ulrich is hitting over 400 right now. There will be an American Association player who hits above 400 this year.
False, but I paused. False. The only reason there was a slight delay, Rob, is that, again, we've lost a lot of arms in the to affiliated ball. And not that we don't have good arms, but we don't have maybe as many consistent like that. So I say false because that's a big number. But I say with hesitancy because, you know, Ulrich has been putting balls in play. I've watched Leo Pena barrel ball after ball after ball after ball. But it's so tough to get four hits and 10 at-bats consistently. And everybody goes through a funk. Everybody goes through something that's going to bring that down. It's an immense number in baseball. If you would have said 387 or 392, I would have said true. But that stinking 400, I get it, Rob. It's the number. So I'm going to say false and then burn this tape after you play the show.
Speaking of transfers, we've seen, I think, 64, I think, is where we're at right now. There will be 100 players transferred to a Major League Baseball organization this season from the American Association.
Let's see, 100 transferred. That is incredible. It's not like we didn't think that this was going to be the case because of the wiping out of minor league, you know, last year and everything that's going around and constricted, lower level leagues and using independent ball players to come in and produce at AA level. So I understand injuries. You know, I understand all the reasons why we've seen it. With the draft coming up, you know, how will that impact American Association? 100 and we're at 64. Oh, man alive. 34. I'm going to take 34. Let's say there's going to be about 25 more. I'm going to say true. I'm going to say true.
I like it.
I don't think we're quite done. I think it's a trend that I hope, it's a tough way to answer this because you're like me. You wish for these guys that we know how good the American Association is. We know how great these ball players are. And for some reason, they found themselves in the AA and after being an affiliated ball because they were passed over for whatever reason or injury has happened. But I see on a nightly basis guys that I don't know how many times you've said this, Rob, but how many times I turn to somebody and say, how is he still here? Or what is he doing here? Why is he not over there? How could this guy not? You know, every other night I'm doing that, and we can't be the only one saying that. So with that reason, to say that there's going to be, 35 more or so or change, something like that, I don't think I can say that, so I'm going to go true 100, which is incredible, by the way.
We are closing in on the midpoint of the season here. Chicago has the most victories at 27-17. So my next one is for you. No team will win as many as 65 games.
65 on the top. It's funny, I was playing this game in my head the other day, thinking about 58-61 was my number. And then I was chatting with Dylan Kelly, former Sioux City Explorer on the bus, and we were looking back at some of those big 70-plus wins for Sioux City, or the Red Hawks, 72 wins in 1998, in an incredible year. Now, I don't think we're going to see 70. And you said 65?
65.
I don't see it. I think the North beats itself up. I think the North, you know, despite the Red Hawks only having three left with Chicago, three left with Milwaukee, and vice versa, I think the North beats itself up and up. I think Kane County, if they were a stock, I'd invest in it now. Georgia's got them playing ball. I think Winnipeg will come around and do better things in the second half. I don't think you sleep on Greg Taggart and Gary. I think there's enough teams to beat each other up. You know, Chicago's on pace for high 50s. If not close to 60. So I don't think the North is going to see that. Sioux City, you know, if they get healthy, we've talked about the injuries they've had, the ability for Mongo to refurbish and replenish. But 65 is a big number. Long answer, I'll say no. I think I'd be more apt, if you'd have put it at 61, 62, maybe.
Okay, number four. We saw the Salina Stockade play in 2017. I believe they were 18-82 that year. The Houston Apollos will eclipse that mark.
How coincidental you bring this up, because randomly the other day off air, we're playing Milwaukee. Adam Brett Walker just hit two home runs on a Friday night, even number 17 and 18. The next day, I'm in the clubhouse, and I'm just shooting the ball with Coaster and Renz. I said, hey, greater number, Houston wins or Adam Brett Walker home runs? And with all due respect, we had talked about how, you know, Adam Brett Walker may have hit already enough home runs to eclipse what Houston will do from a winning standpoint. So, and again, nothing against Houston. You go on the road for every game, for goodness sakes. It can be easy. You had said you'd put the number at what?
So at 19, they'd have to eclipse. They will eclipse 18 victories this season.
Yeah, see, I'm going to say yes, and I think maybe I'm going to go against the grain, because I think a lot of people are thinking not. But I'm going to go against the grain. I don't know if I like my 20th year of existence was a pretty good year. I was hanging out in Northwest North Dakota, playing some slow-pitch softball back from college with my boys, you know, driving over to Montana, having some fun. I like 20. So I like being 20, even though I wasn't 21, Rob. So I like the number 20. So put me down Houston 20. Houston 20, which would be greater than 18 or 19.
That's awesome. And our fifth question for you this week, Jack. So the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks celebrating their 25th anniversary as a team this year. During the 50th anniversary of the Red Hawks, Jack Michaels will still be calling games.
Good Lord willing, that would be something, huh? it'll be, I tell you what, I'll pull a hamstring just screaming track it down, Marge, if I'm still broadcasting at 25. So that would put me at the 77. Well, you know what? You know, Dad's going to be 91 this year. If I'm 77 and still driving and riding in a bus calling Red Hawks baseball, I would be nothing but blessed. Now, we'd have to stop every 13 minutes for me to pee, but I think I would be, I'd be wearing a diaper on the bank. I think I would be fine. Yeah, and the safe bet is probably not, hopefully enjoying some grandchildren. But the fun way to answer this is, you bet. They'll have to take this mic from my cold, dead hands, Rob, and grip it away. I would say, yes, that's the fun answer. 77, put me down, and God knows where the league is going to be. Probably be like 30 teams by then in parts of Puerto Rico, in Oslo, Norway, and a little part of Kamchatka.
I like it. Jack, that's fantastic. Well, Jack, we always let our guests give us a closing thought for this week, so take us out for today.
Well, it's good to have you on board. Just keep firing on all cylinders. The American Association is strong. As you know, the trips are fun. I get my first taste of Jackson, Tennessee. Get on out to Newman Outdoor Field. Get behind home plate. Let me hit you with a Snickers bar during the seventh inning stretch. And get out there, take in a baseball game, watch it on American Association Baseball TV. Log in, subscribe, have some fun, or catch those radio broadcasts. And one for all as we move forward towards the midway point of the American Association.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank Jack Michaels for joining me this week. Hopefully Kevin will be off the DL and back with me next week. So for Kevin, I am Rob Pannier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.